Wake up call!
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right, let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it is Friday, and that means we are going to go over week three in the NFL. We got a schedule for you. We're going to go over the games later on in the show today, but we got to talk about Thursday night's game. And I don't know where to start, to be honest with you. I mean, I've gone back and forth on this, trying to figure out who I want to talk about more. Do I want to talk about Brock Purdy, who remains unbeaten as a starter during the regular season? Or do I want to talk about Daniel Jones, who got a $40 million contract? And you know what? It's more fun to start with Daniel Jones. The Giants are 1-2. The Giants were not competitive in this game at all. And Daniel Jones completed 22 passes for just 137 yards. The Giants' offense alone had 150 yards total. Now, Brock Purdy threw 2 touchdowns and 310 yards, and they blitzed him all night, and he handled the blitz, and he was fantastic, and he's got a bunch of weapons, and it's easy to point to the Niners being 4-0 and loving the story on Brock Purdy. And everyone should love the story on Brock Purdy. Iowa State kid, last pick in the draft, and look where he is. He's the quarterback of a Super Bowl leading team, a team that is picked as one of the teams that should be competitive for a Super Bowl. They may not get to the Super Bowl, but this season, all things being considered, they should stay in a position where they are amongst the Super Bowl conversation. But the Giants were the one last year, coming off a 9-7-1 season, that gave Daniel Jones a $40 million contract to be competitive in games like this. Maybe not win games like this. And I think I need to make this clear. Are the Giants looking for Daniel Jones to go beat San Francisco? Of course, right? The quarterback is at times when you need it the most, the quarterback is the one equalizer that you can have when things start to fall apart. The Giants defense, for example, couldn't get off the field on third down. The Niners were great on third down all night long last night. But the quarterback is the one that is supposed to go, fine, whatever it takes. If we're going to give up 30 points, I need to score 31. If we're going to give up 40 points, I got to score 41. That's the job of the offense. So even if you have no Saquon Barkley, even if your defense can't get off the field on third downs, even if the blitzes aren't working, even if wide receivers are dropping passes, the quarterback is supposed to be able to be the one guy that goes, I'm figuring this out. And we've seen the great ones do that time and time again. But more importantly, the Giants gave Daniel Jones $40 million to be competitive in games like this, to show that even if you come up short, the Giants are still a team to reckon with. And in three games, the Giants are not a team to be reckoned with. They were shut out in their opener. They had to rally against the worst team in the NFL, a team that's admittedly the worst team in the NFL. And last night, where were they at all? Jones is overthrowing receivers. The Niners are having their way with them on defense. Now, again, this game is not necessarily on Daniel Jones's shoulders because there were, a whole bunch of reasons why the Giants weren't in that game. You can say, again, Saquon Barkley being out is a big deal. He's involved in so many of their offensive plays that just replacing him with Matt Breida, replacing him with Gary Brightwell, putting in, you know, maybe Daniel Jones a few runs, it's not going to do it. You know, Saquon Barkley is an important back. He's an important player on this team. But Daniel Jones is supposed to figure out a way to get the offense moving. And time again, they couldn't. Again, couldn't convert. When it was an 11-point game early, he overthrew two receivers that would have given him first downs on drives. One on third down and forced him to kick a field goal. But when you go up against San Francisco, especially when you know that the defense isn't holding anybody at all, right? The blitzes aren't working. Christian McCaffrey is going to go off. Debo Samuels is going to have a fantastic catch in the corner. There's so many things that the Niners can do to you. George Kittle is going to power his way to a first down on a couple of catches. Like, there's so many ways that they're just going to beat you. And maybe if Daniel Jones played a game where he was 22 of 32 for 315 yards and 2 touchdowns, maybe the Niners still found a way to win the game, right? Maybe the Niners are like, all right, real? Okay, all right, fine. We're going to have to score 37. We're going to have to score 38. And they probably would have. But again, when you know, every quarterback, no matter how much you pay him, Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, they're going to lose games, and they're going to lose games on the road. The Giants losing to San Francisco last night is not a problem. It's not an issue. They could have played excellent and lost. That's an outstanding football team that they're playing. That's good on both sides of the ball. But that's not the point. The criticism of Daniel Jones is not that he lost. It's that the Giants were expected to lose, and they did exactly that. They weren't expected to be in this game, and that's exactly what happened. When your quarterback is supposed to get you the extra thing you're going to need even when you are short and deficient in things he has no control over. The quarterback is supposed to go, fine, if we are going to allow 30 points, we will find a way to win this game. Jones looked like a guy putting up just completions, and that was it. Short completions that weren't going anywhere to nobody. And an offense that had hardly any time of possession last night. And you know why they hardly had any time of possession last night? Because they couldn't sustain anything. They had 20 minutes of the football. That's it. The possession meter was 40 to 20. That's ridiculous. They were outgained 441 to 150. They had 10 first downs, while the Niners had 26. There's multiple reasons why that's the case. Multiple reasons. But again, you're asking your quarterback to step up, and he can't step up. He can't even produce somewhat of a competitive game. And this goes back to what I've been saying this whole time. That's what we're settling for in this league. The Giants gave Daniel Jones $40 million because in the end, there's no but other option. What do we say all the time when you don't like your quarterback? Yeah, but who are you going to get? Like, you don't like Dak Prescott in Dallas? Name me your better quarterback that's sitting on his couch right now. Name me the better quarterback that is floating around on a practice squad. Because you know what makes Brock Purdy's story so special? Is that he was Mr. Irrelevant. Nobody saw it. And Kyle Shanahan's system works. It's all of these things that add up to a maybe we should have seen it all along, but it's okay that we didn't because the story's better that we didn't. That's why Brock Purdy is a special individual in the National Football League. It's Brady all over again. It's similar, again, to Brady. They're not similar quarterbacks, and they don't have similar resumes, so calm down. But their stories are similar. When the Patriots needed a quarterback to take over for Drew Bledsoe that was going to keep them in football games and get them in football games, they did. They found the guy. Maybe it was the defense. That year's Patriots defense was really good. Maybe it was just a kid who just worked within the system and didn't turn the ball over a lot and didn't need to make huge plays, but still found ways to win. Daniel Jones doesn't have it. That's it. He doesn't have it. Now, it's easy. Again, it's easy with Brock Purdy. He's got Christian McCaffrey, for crying out loud. I mean, for crying out loud. He's got George Kittle. He's got Deebo Samuel. He didn't have Brandon Ayuk, and he didn't have a problem.
Didn't matter.
But when they have Brandon Ayuk, that's another person that's on this incredible football team that gives them this offense.
I'm 100% agreeing with you because all last night into this morning driving in, I kept sitting there like, okay, are the Giants terrible or are the Niners just that good?
Yeah.
And I'm leaning towards the Giants being terrible.
The Giants are terrible.
I mean, I know the Niners are good. I know that defense is good. And yes, they should have a safety. That thing bothers me.
They always do that.
They
by
do
the way.
All
they
the
always
time.
Do that. Whenever you sack the quarterback in the when you scramble, you get him in the end zone.
Oh, no,
they
no,
always
right
go, no,
here.
No, right here. It's right here.
1 yard
it's right
line.
Here.
Like, yeah. No, that was.
It's one of the most reluctant calls officials don't want to make.
Yeah,
it has to be blatant. It has to be absolutely blatant. But if there's any wiggle room, if they can get away with putting the ball on the half yard line, they'll put the ball on
right.
the half yard line.
But. I'm coming away, and I'm glad you started off with Daniel Jones. I mean, Brock Purdy's story is Brock Purdy's story. I mean, it's, you know, you're going to write a movie about it someday, probably, and the movie will be titled Mr. Irrelevant. But I really feel Daniel Jones fleeced the Giants.
Like, I think he did.
I can't help it. I mean, you know, you look at the box score, 22 of 32. Okay, you know, that's not terrible. But it was like the 22 that he got, they were all 2-3 yard passes. That was
it. If the total yardage was 360 and he had right. three touchdowns, you'd go, this is an awesome, these are awesome statistics.
But every pass was just, here you go, here you go, here you go. Like I understand the pocket collapse on him quickly. I understand that line is terrible.
But the thing is, again, you can have a Joe Burrow, a Patrick Mahomes, a Justin Herbert, a Trevor Lawrence, and you can have a night where it was awful. It was right. Patrick Mahomes had a terrible game. You can have those games.
Yes.
You're not paying $40 million so Daniel Jones delivers gems every week. But the problem is that when you watch it, you go, this isn't it. I'm sorry. Whatever it is, he has none of it.
Right.
He doesn't have it. And maybe it was Saquon Barkley last year was the main reason they went 9-7-1. And Jones was good. Jones was good. But the reality is, again, because we have such a shortage of quarterbacks that can actually start you games in the National Football League and get you wins when you – a guy like Daniel Jones can make $40 million a year.
I mean, okay, you know, the thing that he's lacking is that fire. Like, he never looks angry. He never looks disgusted with his team. He never looks just – mad that, God, like, you know, Lyon, why do you keep collapsing? You know,
right.
I need more time than a second and a half.
But even Brian Daboll said after the game, he's like, we talked about one of the throws to Waller that was over his head on third down. He's like, it was an 11-point game and we're driving.
Yeah.
And then it was like, well, that's it. It's done. He overthrew a guy that was open, that had an extra step on his defender, and he couldn't deliver him the football. So again, Giants are 1-2, and they don't look very good at all. All right, we will continue. That's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. I got some news out of Jacksonville I want to get to coming up next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. We'll get more into Thursday night's game, whatever we can produce and dissect out of a game that really was a nice exhibition for the 49ers to showcase why they're really good. Like, literally, Brandon Ayuk's absence was irrelevant to the game. Yeah, had no impact whatsoever on the contest.
You almost forget that he was on the team.
Yeah, Saquon Barkley, you could see him being out of this game a mile away.
Yeah.
Every time the Giants had the ball, you knew Saquon Barkley wasn't playing.
And maybe that's what they needed. They needed an established running game.
Yeah, maybe
that,
so.
That kind of frees Daniel Jones up so he can get a little, be a better passer. But,
yep.
I mean, but if you're paying a quarterback that much money, I expect him to be able to do it on his own.
He should be able to keep you in a game even if he doesn't end up
right.
winning the game.
Now, I'm not saying he's like Mahomes level.
No.
But Mahomes doesn't need anybody.
You just got to be able to take a guy is going to have to be able to go, "Hey, I'm short, but you know what? Hey, we're going to dogfight this thing. It's going to be tough for them." But it wasn't tough for them at all. And again, the Giants defense didn't help. Every time they had third downs, the Niners converted.
Yeah.
It was crazy. I mean, it was crazy, crazy, crazy how the Giants couldn't get.
And if they did convert it, and if like it was third and inches, I'd just give them 10 yards.
Yeah.
So many times, like, you know, they just need to get the ball across the line, but there's like, oh, no, guys, go down over here. It's wide open. Go over there.
So that's how your Thursday night starts. By the way, can we calm down on the Al Michaels hatred across social media?
Really?
Can we just slow down? I mean, you know. I get it. The guy has been broadcasting since the 1970s. All right. He's been around for a really long time. But for the love of Pete, he can make a mistake or two without a mental meltdown by people. Like, I'm not kidding when I say this. I mean this. If our culture is so uber sensitive on these little tiny things, we're doomed. We are doomed. There's a superpower out there ready to pounce on us weaklings because we mentally can't handle it when Al Michaels says the 49ers had four Super Bowls when they really had five. Like, seriously.
Right.
Like people just breaking down in tears on Twitter because Al Michaels forgot that Steve Young won Super Bowl 29, a game he broadcast, by the way, for ABC. I'm so sorry that he did that. The problem is this. You know what the problem is? It's very simple. When you get to a point where you sort of remember blocks rather than like the one lone one that's kind of floating. The Niners won four Super Bowls with Joe Montana, and then they won one with Steve Young. But it was the one that he won with Steve Young was kind of a couple of years later down the road a little bit. It wasn't like in a block of winning Super Bowl 16, Super Bowl 19, Super Bowl 23, Super Bowl 24. Like, it wasn't like that. It was like Super Bowl 29, like number of years later. And yeah, it's easy to forget sometimes. It is. And people just, they want one of the greatest broadcasters of all time to retire over that. Time to retire. Great. You know what will happen if you just ask people to retire every time somebody makes a mistake? No one will be in the working, and no one will work at all. There'll be no labor at all. Like, we won't make things, build things, create things, nothing. Everyone will be like, there's nothing I can do. I made one mistake, and somebody on Twitter asked me to retire, so I did. I'm 27. I don't know what to do. Give me a break. Slow down. All right, there is a story I needed to get to. This is out of Jacksonville, and it's one of those I told you so stories, but it's not I told you so, like Tony D told you so. It's more like the collective NFL universe told you so. This is a story that was coming at some point. We all knew it was coming, and it was coming. And that is this. The Jaguars are now making subtle threats to move out of Jacksonville if they don't get $1 billion to renovate EverBank Stadium. This is not to build them a new stadium. This is renovations to a stadium. They want $1 billion in taxpayer money, and they've given subtle threats about moving. Now, let me go back to something here. When you own a football team or a basketball team or baseball team, it doesn't matter. Sometimes you want to move. Sometimes you have no interest whatsoever if something passes or not. I used to do this old bit years and years ago, I did it in Colorado, called 5 Steps to Move a Team. And the very simple is, you buy the team and you tell everybody how much you love the city. We love it here in Seattle. We love it here in wherever. And then you start complaining subtly and, you know, off to the side, not a big deal. You don't yell and scream in the camera, but you start talking about the struggles that you have to be competitive in the sport because you don't have the things other teams have. Yeah, it's tough to, yeah, it's tough for us. We don't have the kind of luxury suites like they do in Dallas or New York or whatever. You just sort of throw these hints out there, right? The third thing is that you, behind the scenes, create some sort of public support package that you know has zero chance of passing. So you sit down with, you know, some guy you're giving money to in a campaign. He's in like the state house representative or whatever. And you say, well, we need like $1 billion in renovation. And the guy says, yeah, that's never going to pass. Oh no, but like frame it as like, we're going to take money from schools or we're going to take money from daycare centers or we're going to take money from the kindergarten program or put it in the thing that we're going to cut funding for senior citizens. I don't care. Just put together something where, most every single citizen in our community would turn this down. You put it out there, you say, well, the football team needs $1 billion. And then the opponents scream, and our kids will starve. They won't have school lunches. Senior citizens will die every day without the care they need if we give this football team the money or this basketball team the money. So you're sitting back going, nothing I can do. We needed it. Nothing I can do. And then while you privately laugh, you publicly cry that you had to move the team. And then off you go. It worked for Clay Bennett with the Seattle Supersonics. That's exactly what happened. He bought the team, was an Oklahoma City guy, always wanted to move the team to Oklahoma City, but he couldn't just move it. He wasn't going to do Jim Irsay. No, what he basically put had proposals for Key Bank Arena at the time of what it was called. Renovate that. Nope. Seattle turned it down. Nope. Nothing I can do. I left. Is Shad Khan doing this? This has been a long time coming. That's why I started this story by saying everyone in the NFL has been waiting for this day when Jacksonville would go, you know, maybe we just can't stay in Jacksonville anymore. University of North Florida did a poll. 6% of Jacksonville residents favor paying this $1 billion. 6%. That means when they asked the people of Jacksonville about this, knowing that the people who are answering this would know the ramifications of a no vote, they still said no. 94% of the people still said no. And here was the other kicker in the poll. 47% of the people said they couldn't have cared less if Jacksonville moved without the money. Nearly 50% of the people polled by the University of North Florida said they don't care if the Jags leave.
Oops, wrong poll.
Whoops. Right? This has been going on for a long time.
That's not our target audience.
What was the one team we always said would be moving to L.A. before the Rams and the Chargers moved to L.A.? Was Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Right? And I always said that the NFL did a brilliant job keeping teams out of Los Angeles until everybody could get a stadium deal. Everybody got new stadiums because L.A. was such a carrot to dangle. And then finally they went, yep, you can move there now. Move to London, right? Well, let's have a team in London. Jacksonville, let's move them to London.
Just a matter of time before they do, right?
Yeah. Now, this might be the thing the NFL goes, you know what? Logistically, it makes no sense, but you know what? What the hell? We'll just give it to them. We'll see how it works. We'll figure it out. So here's the stadium. Now, I know they got Trevor Lawrence now, and they went to the playoffs, but here's basically the history of Everbank Stadium. It is tarped up for Jaguars games, and the tarps are removed one time, and that's when Georgia plays Florida. And that's it. Or maybe Taylor Swift has a concert there. Other than that, they put tarps on certain sections of the stadium because they can't sell those tickets. Now, again, it's a little different. They're winning. They've got Trevor Lawrence coming off a playoff run, but they've come off playoff runs before. The Jacksonville Jaguars have played, I think, in two AFC championship games in their history. Early in the 90s, the second year of existence, and then they played one with Blake Bortles in New England. So they've had successful seasons. They just are a team that has never really gotten the support that you find in other NFL markets. Interesting. I don't know where this is heading, but I do know this. If I lived in North Florida, I wouldn't give them $1 billion. I'd probably be one of the 47%. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us again. Hit us up on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Listen, I have said for years and years, an NFL team in London is not going to work. I've done this song and dance a million times. I don't care when people say, oh, the NFL is going to expand to London. I'm like, tell me how it will work. Like, what division would they be in? What about travel? I mean, it's not, London isn't Canada. I mean, it's a long flight. No matter, if you're in New York, it's like a 5-hour flight.
I know, is every away game two games?
Yeah, exactly. You're going to go there and hang out in London for two games? But here's the thing. If Jacksonville went to the league and said, you know what? Screw it. We didn't get our $1 billion. We're leaving. And we want to try London. I think the NFL goes, you know what? Let's figure it out. Let's do it. Let's see what happens. Let's go over there. Maybe we go over there and we tell everybody it's a trial thing for a year. You know, everybody gets to play there for a year until we find a suitable home. Then we'll just see if we can make it work. We've got the brightest minds. We'll figure out a schedule. We'll make it work. We'll figure it out. I don't know. But Now I'm at the point where if the league wants to do it, they'll probably just go, yeah, just to punish Jacksonville, we'll disrupt the normal logistics of our league to punish the city of Jacksonville for not putting $1 billion in to renovations into a dumpy stadium. You know what? Jacksonville got a Super Bowl. They got Super Bowl 39. Now listen, the NFL goes to Tampa all the time. They go to Miami all the time. They went to Jacksonville. They've never returned, and they've never even considered returning to Jacksonville. That's how bad that Super Bowl was. The people hated it. Who covered it said, this is terrible, terrible.
The only thing
stadium stunk. It's awful.
The only thing I remember about that Super Bowl was that there weren't enough hotels, so they brought in cruise ships.
Yeah.
That's
I remember that.
Was that also the one that Ray Lewis got in trouble?
No, that was the Super Bowl. That was the Super Bowl in Jacksonville was Super Bowl 30. Let me think real quick. 39. It was the Patriots and the Eagles.
Okay, so
Ray Lewis got in trouble in Atlanta.
Was it Atlanta?
Yeah, it was in Atlanta.
You're right.
It was in Atlanta. It's Super Bowl 34 because he was the MVP of Super Bowl 35. And people said, wow, what a difference a year makes. A year ago, he's in jail and being, you know,
that's right, yep,
discussed about this murder thing. Here he is a year later, he's a Super Bowl MVP.
Yeah, but other than that,
never gone back. It's not even in the rotation. Like, it's not
which
even
is surprising,
discussion.
Right? Because that's
it's a
probably
Florida city.
That's probably and one of the you know right on the water. Everything's on the water there.
Yeah, it's again. You're talking about a city that's got TPC Sawgrass. You can do a little golf there. Like you got beaches. Is it Miami? Does it have the nightlife? Of course not. Is it Tampa in the cultural of this Tampa St. Peter? No, but it is a Florida city that has an NFL team, and the NFL will never, ever go back there. Right? Miami will continue to get Super Bowls forever. Tampa, same thing. New Orleans, same thing. There's a few others. Houston will probably get a few more Super Bowls. LA will get a few more Super Bowls. Definitely. Las Vegas will definitely get a few Super Bowls.
Well, let's wait and see.
Well, we'll wait and see. Yeah, if this Super Bowl coming up is a complete and utter public relations disaster,
exactly,
maybe they don't go back. When you bring in every single entertainment entity in the world to Las Vegas for the Super Bowl, we'll see how that plays out. Yeah. That's a very good point.
I think the game is going to be great. The viewing it will be awesome. All of that stuff will be fantastic. It's the week leading up.
Yeah.
That's where, you know, if you hear so and so got in trouble doing this and that, they may say, yeah, we can't come back ever again.
Exactly. Atlanta's going to get a few more Super Bowls, but Jacksonville, nope.
Yeah,
not a chance. Not a chance. They are never going back there. And it Shad Khan is, I got to be honest with you, he's towing a really, really, he's towing a tightrope enough. And this is my theory on this. He's walking a tightrope where I think he wants to move the team, right? Like, I think he knows this had zero chance of passing. Zero chance of passing. And I think they went, we really do want to move. Now, if it's not London, where in the United States could they go? St. Louis? Well, they just walked that line with Stan Kroenke. Kroenke wanted a stadium and said, no, he moved to L.A. But I think Kroenke was in the same position. I think Kroenke was like, I don't want to stay in St. Louis, so I don't want you to build me a new stadium. I don't want you to renovate. And Kroenke's a Missouri guy. He's a Missouri guy. And even then, I think he went, L.A., are you kidding me? I can own a football stadium in Los Angeles? Like, I love Missouri, but I don't love it that much. Bye. Take the Rams back to L.A. with a brand new, brilliantly built stadium. Yep, I'll be doing that. And I think Shad Khan is in that position where he's like, could I go to what city could I go to? Where could I go to? And I got to be honest with you, I've looked through the map. If you're taking St. Louis off the board because they've already had their chance and they're probably not going to be any better financially than for Shad Khan in terms of getting what he wants out of his stadium, then London seems to be it. And again, I have zero idea how they're going to make that work. Now, maybe in the end, this is just a threat and the people of Jacksonville don't vote for this. And he goes, all right, fine. I found the $1 billion somewhere else. All right. Maybe that's the case. I don't know. But I mean, really, I mean, just mentally scan the United States real quick. Try to find a major city that doesn't have an NFL team. I mean, San Diego, would he go there? What about, I mean, San Antonio's is out. Jerry Jones will, that's a hill he'll die on. He's not going to let an NFL team go to San Antonio. But where else? Birmingham, Alabama? No. Yeah, well, like, again, you can scan, you can try to figure it out, but I can't see a place that would, Chicago, two teams? No. I don't know. But again, when you're asking the people of Jacksonville, who have hardly any success with their football franchise since it came in the mid-90s, to pony up $1 billion for renovations to a new stadium. You know what? And you know, I hate to say this. I really do. But you're almost better off trying to get the money for a brand new stadium.
Yeah.
All right? Than renovations. Because here in Tennessee, where I live, in Nashville, they're going to be building a brand new stadium. It's going to be domed. It is one of the appeals. Okay, now here's the deal. Whenever they talk about this stadium is going to revitalize this area, there have been a million studies to show that doesn't always work. But you can get a different look to a certain part of town. Like we talked about this with the Rays. You build a stadium, then things get built around it. They never, ever, ever put a stadium where things are and is happening. It's always built around mm-hmm. the stadium because you get the cheapest real estate you can within the city limits.
Yeah, that's why
so
I said.
You're always in like an industrial park that nobody's using anymore, rundown area of town. Next thing you know, you build bars and restaurants and shops, and you sort of revitalize that area.
No, like I bring up Petco Park all the time because where they built it was just you never went over there,
right?
But they built it all up around there, and it expanded. San Diego's kind of downtown San Diego is known for what's called the Gas Lamp District, right? And it's just. You know, it's like two, three, at that time, it was only like maybe two streets. And it was just bars and nightclubs and trendy restaurants and fun shops. And you just hung out there from, you know, morning all the way until night. That expanded that area.
Yeah, sure.
And they saw a huge boom, but that's not always the case.
Not always the case. So, you know, here in Nashville, they're going to build a brand new dome stadium. And the appeal to the city council was, look, this isn't just going to be a football stadium because Nissan Stadium where the Titans play is open. It's not great. It's really not a great stadium. It's a building. I mean, it's a stadium.
But
it's got seats. It's got concrete.
It was the one they built for the Titans?
Yeah.
Back in the 90s when they came in.
1990s.
Yeah.
Yeah, late 90s when they went. Here's a little quick history. If you're going to leave, have a plan. Okay? If you're going to leave a city, have a plan. Because the Houston Oilers did not have a good plan, right? So when Bud Adams wanted to move the Oilers, he moved them to Tennessee, but they couldn't play at Vanderbilt, right? Because Vanderbilt was too small. The NFL said, you can't play there. It's too small.
What did they change their tune on that one, though, huh?
Yeah, right? Because here's what happened. So they couldn't play in Nashville. Knoxville was too big. Like, that stadium was way too big. That was 109,000. It was crazy. So they played at the Liberty Bowl in Memphis. But when that didn't work out, the team was living in Nashville. They were commuting 3 hours for games by bus. And it was insane. And then they said, we can't do this. So they did play at Vanderbilt before Nissan Stadium got open.
Yeah.
But the appeal to the city council was Super Bowls, NCAA Final Four can be here with the Dome Stadium. The NCAA Football Championships, the playoffs can be here. The championship game could be here. There's a million things that they're going to be able to do with it. And that was the big appeal to it. Bigger events are going to come to Nashville. They want big events in the city. When you tell the public you're just renovating the dump they've gone to, what they mean is luxury suites you're never going to sit in. That's what they mean.
Ron Colbert continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Colbert.
All right, thanks for joining us. Hey, by the way, in 1 week, we got the Ryder Cup beginning. Yay, Ryder Cup in Rome, Italy. It's like one of my favorite events. Every 2 years, America versus Europe in a down, gritty golf battle.
us versus them.
I think I'm batting 1,000 in my life converting people to the Ryder Cup. Like, and I can't do it with non-sports fans. Like, if you're not up for like an NFL game,
right,
or
yeah,
Colorado, Oregon, I'm not going to get you into the Ryder Cup. But if I take somebody who loves football, who loves baseball, follows the World Series, and I go, "Do you like golf?" And they go, "Yeah, just watch the Masters." You ever watch the Ryder Cup? No. I'm like, okay, watch the Ryder Cup. And everyone has come back saying, "Oh my God, that is amazing. That I couldn't stop watching." I go, "I know, because it's unlike anything
else
you'll ever see."
I mean, I'm not going to say it's not golf. But it's not like your traditional golf.
Yeah.
It's like every hole is hole 16.
It's especially on Sunday.
Phoenix Open.
In the singles matches,
mm-hmm,
when the points, that's where it matters. Like, okay, we're accumulating,
yeah,
points. You've just got like, you've got bored, right?
The match play, it's like, yeah, you know, I know you need it because it's like a skill event for all type of play.
No, that's a handicapping. Match play is if you and I play.
No, I know. No, I'm saying the tournament itself. You got to be. It's like you got to be good at each little facet of golf, right? That you kind of made a tournament out of all the different variations of the game.
Okay, I'm not following you. So it like they have a putting contest or a chipping contest or
no. You have match play, stroke play, like
I'll just give you the Ryder Cup thing. The Ryder Cup is there's three ways the Ryder Cup is played. So one is best ball, which is you and I play,
right?
And if I get a 4 and you get a 3, we take your 3.
Take my 3.
All right, so we take the, and then it's a match play within that format against two other players. So then there's also a foursome, alternate shot. So then I hit, you hit, you, and then that's our score, and we play match play again. Then the Sunday is the singles matches, which is just a head-to-head match play event.
So there is no stroke play.
No, there's no stroke play at all. No stroke play at all. So you're basically, so what happens is in on Sunday is that an NBC does this great because they have this like patriotic music, which is weird. It's like it's like that, but it's different. It's kind of a variation of that. And Dan Hicks will just be like, and he'll show you like the board. And it'll be like Americans all over the board. And it's early and it's like early matches. And you'll see like the United States leading 1-up, 2-up, 3-up, 4-up. Europe's got a match here. They're winning. Europe's got a match here. They're winning. And it's like now you're calculating the points. You're like, okay, we need 14.5 points wins. And if you don't have the cup, you have to get 14.5 points. If you have the cup, you just have to get 14 points. Because a tie gives you the cup. So the United States won the last Ryder Cup. So they only need 14. So if they go into Sunday's matches and let's say they're down, usually it's 16. So it's 16 points. So let's say they're down 9-7 going into the final round. Now you're doing the math. You're like, okay, these early matches, if they win those two, they'll be tied. They can get 4. It looks like they're way ahead over here. That's 1. They're way ahead over here. That one's too close. So then you start following the matches that are really tight to see if the U.S. can get the necessary points. And what happens is towards the end of the singles matches, I'll put the United States in a winning context. Let's say the U.S. is winning. What will happen is, let's say Jordan Spieth is, he's got a putt to win the match. So he's got a birdie putt. If he makes it, he wins the match. He makes it. Boom. Everyone's cheering. Then they all run over to another match because now they want to support the guy behind him or they want to support the guy that's ahead of him that's still in a tight match with his European foe. And everyone's going crazy. I mean, like the crowd's losing their minds. Everyone's going nuts. When the board shifts on one hole, you'll hear it, especially in Europe. They'll go bananas. They will go absolutely bananas. If there's a blue flag that gets flipped on the board anywhere on the course, they will cheer it no matter where they are. So if they're on 18 waiting to watch that and they see a blue flag flip, you'll hear it all around the golf course. It's the most energetic, exciting thing that golf has. And it's so intense. Guys have chipped chili dip shots, hit shank shots. I mean, there are guys who have gone I couldn't feel my hands. Like, I'm in the middle of the fairway, and I can't feel anything. I'm so nervous. I'm shaking. Mark Calcavecchia once in, like, the 80s hit a shot in the water. Like, it never got off the ground. It's like, if you know when you're playing with a duffer friend, and they just worm burner into the water? He had a worm burner into the water. He said, I can't swing. He goes, I can't swing the club. He goes, I'm so nervous. And it was just, that's the energy that the Ryder Cup can be. Christy O'Connor in 1989 at the Belfry hit a 2-iron to like 3 feet. He was old. He was like 40-something years old. He's playing Fred Couples, the Masters champion, or would be the Masters champion in a couple years. And the crowd went so nuts, he started crying. He's like, they were going so crazy for his shot that they just started weeping to his caddy. He's like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I just beat Fred Couples at the Ryder Cup in front of my countrymen. It's unlike anything else. I watched Hunter Mahan once hit a chip shot. He needed like 30 yards. He hit it 3 feet. He's like, I can't do this. It's great. It's so fantastic. I think I told the story about the Spanish Armada of Jose Maria Olazabal and Seve Ballesteros in a match once. And they were playing in Europe. And Olazabal hit a shot to 3 feet or something like that. And the crowd was making the ground shake. And the camera, that was the camera angle. The camera was shaking like it was like an earthquake. As he was walking up, there was an ocean of people that surrounded the green, just all high up on bleachers, filled. And then there was a bunch of people lined up on the sides. And they were all screaming and cheering and going crazy. The camera was just shaking back and forth. And he's just walking up there to this enormous roar. It's gotten personal, and that's one of the reasons why the Ryder Cup is becoming so exciting. It has really gotten like a college game. And I always said, like, what I've always loved about college football, college basketball somewhat, but college football, is because there is more on the line in a college game, because there is so much pride people have in the university that they've chosen. And it isn't so much like if you didn't go to Alabama, but you live near Alabama and you root for them, that's one thing. But when you're going to Alabama, that's why students are just so great to have around, because there's so much pride that they have in the university they've picked, that they're attending, that they go to. And so that's why they just go nuts. And the Ryder Cup got to the point where it was the same thing. It was, Europeans were tired of losing all the time. They were tired of this event meaning nothing. It meant something to them. And yet the United States was unstoppable. It was unbeatable. And then it started to change. And when it started to change, one of the reasons was Seve Ballesteros was angry. And he was mad. And Europeans, it used to be a Great Britain versus the United States thing. And once they expanded it to Europe, Seve joined it and said, this is coming to an end. We're not doing this anymore. We're not losing. And he got feisty. He'd argue with Paul Azinger about rules. He was like, we're not settling. We are going out there and winning. Go out there and beat these guys. And then when the Europe started winning, the United States was like, well, they are more friends than we are. We're all individual. We don't even know each other. And they said, all right, let's start changing that then. You know what, guys? If you know you're making the Ryder Cup, start playing practice rounds with other Ryder Cup people. If you know you're going to make it based on points, start having dinner with these people. Take them out to dinner, have conversations, travel with them when you can. Let's do what they do. And then it started to change. United States started winning. They win on this soil, but they can't win over there. So it's going to be a big deal. 1 week in Rome, Italy, which is really cool because it used to just be, you know, over in England. Now it's going to be, it's been in Spain. It was just in France. It's now in Italy.
Yeah, they're taking it on a European tour, if you will.
I'm already starting to hear people say they don't like the golf course, which is great.
You know what? I mean, when I think of Rome, I don't think of green open spaces.
No, I don't think of stellar golfers. Like, yeah. That's the other thing. I don't, like, you know, it was only been a handful of Italian golfers.
Although, you know what would be nice is if they put a golf course up in the Switzerland, Austrian Alps.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
That'd be pretty.
That'd be nice.
So, I'm sure there's a golf course
there. I'm sure there is.
It's not covered in snow right now.
I think Francisco Molinari is a British Open champion. I think he's an Italian major winner.
There you go.
But, yeah, there you go. Ryder Cup in 1 week. All right, when we come back, we'll get the good, the bad, and the dumb. We'll continue on the NFL Thursday night game last night. How good really are the 49ers? Well, they're very good. We'll talk about that as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.